Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield and we're glad that you're here as always. I don't know why this is Lawyer Month here on Driven to Business, but it is. We've had people from the Liberty Institute on there. Today we have Jason Thompson, a lawyer here in town, also the GOP chairman, the Republican chairman of the 7th District here in Georgia. Jason, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you for having me on.
Jason, by the way, we are streaming live, just for our listeners, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and we will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com, and as I'm finding out, many other places around the web. Just search for Eddie Mayfield Driven to Business, and it'll pop up, and you can listen to our programs. Jason, tell us the field of law. I was kind of kidding about having all these lawyers on, and with a Hobby Lobby decision and all the other things going on right now, it actually is a very interesting time to have attorneys on, because depending on your point of view, either fortunately or unfortunately, those of us in business find ourselves dealing more and more with lawyers. Tell us, what made you decide to enter the field of law? What got you into that?
Well, I think it was more of a calling, and I don't know if all attorneys believe that, probably not, but what made me want to go into it originally was I really wanted to practice in the area of constitutional rights and religious liberties. But then when you have a family and have to pay bills, you start practicing a lot of other stuff that pays the bills. But I still do, to a certain extent, practice in those areas, and some of it's pro bono. But as a criminal lawyer, I do a lot of criminal defense. So I say that lawyers that do criminal defense are really the last constitutional defenders.
You know,
that's what we do it day in and day out.
I was listening to a speech, and somebody was saying, I don't know where I heard this, that there are so many laws now. And I think they were talking particularly about federal laws. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the basis on that is. Just what a guest on a panel show said. He said that the average businessman probably commits 3 felonies a day he doesn't even know about, or things that could be loosely interpreted as felonies. Do you agree with that?
I actually saw that person say that. I know what you're talking about. It was in the movie America.
That's exactly right. I could not remember that. You're exactly right.
I didn't know what he was talking about, and he didn't explain.
Oh, well, me either. I guess, except for the fact that Jason, I've been pulled over for speeding tickets, but there was never a time I didn't know that I was speeding when I was pulled over, so I've never argued about that. I have found myself in business, in some trouble with the IRS on a few things that I did not know we did. I didn't even know we weren't supposed to do. And I that was early in business, and I kind of learned from that to start using lawyers and CPAs to keep me from doing those kinds of things. Jason, I Googled here in preparation for our program today. I just asked, is America the most litigious society? And I actually got some conflicting answers. Some said yes, some said no, depending on sort of how you look at it. But several things, as best I could figure out, what it said was that we may or may not be the most litigious society, but we do seem to be a society for whom the fear of litigation is kind of dominant. Do you see that as an attorney?
Yes and no. Let me tell you something. What this really leads up to is lawsuit reform and things like that.
Right, right.
Republicans for a long time have been very pro lawsuit reform because they cite different cases where people have basically hit the jackpot.
Right.
I've heard different state representatives, U.S. congressmen talk about these things over and over again. One of the reasons for that is because the Democrats have given a lot of money the trial lawyers have given a lot of money to Democrats.
Right, right.
But I'll give you an example, though. There was a state, I won't mention him by name, but there's a state representative here in Gwinnett County who would say all kinds of disparaging things about lawyers in general, until he got into a car accident. Then the insurance company didn't want to basically pay his bills, and he was beside himself, and never talked about it again after that. So, you know, I look at it like this. If you're talking about lawsuit reform, where you want to get rid of the jury trial, a constitutional right, by the way, Sixth Amendment, and all these other things to try to stop lawsuits, really what it boils down to is a sort of judicial socialism, where you can't be judged by a jury of your peers. You just let an autonomous government agency, a judge or a panel or something, handle this. So when you look at it that way, if you look at it from a liberty conservative standpoint, most Republicans probably wouldn't want to support something like that.
No. I've never heard anyone actually doing away with a jury trial. Here's some of my own experience in business as a small business person. I've been sued 3 times. Really, in every case, it was what I would term an intimidation suit. It was to make me settle something that I did not want to settle out of court. In no case did any of them ever get to court. And one of them was by some people who I think what they did was sue me and then file a ton of discovery on me that cost me a lot of money. And I think what they were trying to do was to break me. And I guess in my mind, and that's an interesting, you do bring up, we certainly, you know, if I were being attacked by, let's say, the IRS or something, I certainly want a good lawyer, a Christian lawyer, actually, to come alongside me and fight with me. And I think we all want that. But then on the other hand, there is this sort of a frivolous, do you support, I'm just asking because I don't talk about this with lawyers very often, but do you support tort reforms such as loser pays, for instance, or something like that, which are some?
No, I don't, because honestly, there would be so many cases where people would never be able to file a lawsuit. I see things day in and day out where people aren't able to file anywhere where they should.
Right.
And I'll give you some examples. That what you're talking about the discovery and overloading discovery, that also works for a defense as well. Because I'll even tell you what a lawyer told me not too long ago in a lawsuit I had. He said, let's face it, we've got money and you don't.
Right.
Worked for a major insurance company.
Right.
Basically what he was saying was, we're going to overload you with so much discovery that you're going to just your client's going to have to keep spending money. So it does work both ways.
You know, I was kidding. We were talking before we came on the air here about my state rep, B.J. Pack, who's, by the way, going to be I don't know B.J. except he's very casual, but he's going to be a guest on the program here in the coming weeks. At the last legislative session, he was posting on Facebook about, and we were kidding him about this. He was sort of talking to us about all the bill, and he named off, we've passed this many bills, and, you know, we're going to try and pass this many before the session ends. And some of us were kind of kidding with him on Facebook. Said, well, how many laws did you repeal while you were down there? Because you keep adding these laws that we already don't know what they are.
And the problem is, once something's added, you can hardly ever get rid of it.
Exactly.
Just like a government agency.
And I guess that's why, exactly. That's exactly a good, a very good point. You know, Jason, I heard a speech by a guy named Kelly Shackelford with the Liberty Institute this week. And Kelly was talking about, you mentioned you had been called into law. Kelly's also a Christian lawyer. He said he felt he was trying to decide whether to be a pastor or a lawyer, and he had some guy ask him, said, isn't that kind of a difference between God and Satan? I mean, which are you?
Which side? Let me tell you a story about that. I have a good story. My sister-in-law, Deborah, a wonderful woman, God rest her soul, she died about a year and a half ago of a real rare form of cancer, and we used to share office space in Lawrenceville. But at one time, she was a prosecutor, and both myself and my brother-in-law do criminal defense, and She switched from being a prosecutor to criminal defense, but when my daughter was real young, she went to this career day at her school, and my wife dressed her up and put her hair back in a bun and everything, and she wanted to be a prosecutor like her Aunt Debbie. I said, why do you want to be a prosecutor? And she said, well, because I want to put the bad guys in jail. And I said, no, honey, you don't understand. Uncle Bob and Daddy are like Jesus. See, Aunt Debbie's more like Satan. She accuses the people, and we help them. But and I said, and then she changed and saw the light and became a defense attorney. But no, seriously though, I've also done prosecutorial work as well. But there is something about a criminal offense that I believe is also a calling as well, because it takes a special person. There's also a ministry involved in it, depending on how you do it.
I agree with that 100%. I have some very good friends that do a lot of work. Now, they're sort of after you get through with them. They're already in prison, and they go in and deal with these folks. And, you know, there are – I know the it's very easy for those of us that have never been involved with the criminal justice system to just say – you know, lock them up, throw away the key kind of thing. But there, we have so many people in prison in this country. It's an absurd number of people in prison in this country.
And, well, Governor Deal has done a great job in the last couple of years of instituting your criminal justice reform. And one of the things that he's done is to push for what are called accountability courts or treatment courts.
Right.
Instead of having someone just locked up in jail and they're going to come out and start using drugs again or alcohol, actually have some sort of a court program that they can go through. They can still end up going to jail, but at least it'll help them to kick this habit so they're not stealing to try to get drugs, and they can better their lives and their own lives, which helps society, their family, and everything. So that's come a long way. Accountability courts are now pretty prevalent over the last few years in most counties.
I think that's a great idea. Hey, Jason, I'm glad you're here. Looking forward to talking more with you as the program goes along. Let me remind everyone, we're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here on Driven to Business. As I said earlier, we are streaming live, even as we speak right now, on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com. You're listening to Driven to Business. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Jason Thompson, an attorney here in town, and also, as we're about to talk about, the Republican chairman of the 7th District here in Georgia. How did you get into tell us about your political background, Jason. How did you get into that?
Well, I've been involved for a long time. One of the first involvements I ever had was a kind of a chance meeting with Jack Kemp. I grew up in South Dakota.
Right.
And my dad owned a Ben Franklin store.
One of my heroes, as a matter of fact, sort of Jack Kemp. I've always liked him.
Well, my dad owned a Ben Franklin store. I don't know if they even have those anymore. But it was traditional, and I don't know if they still do this, but for people on the guys on the football team to wear their jersey the day before the game, so,
right.
You know, so remind people of the game coming up. And my friend and I had our jerseys on, and Kemp was coming through town, and in South Dakota, people are a little more stoic, okay, mostly German, Norwegian, you know, Scandinavian, those are my roots. So people, if somebody, you know, if they see a politician, they don't run around them, they just kind of look at them like an alien landed. And that's what was going on for Jack Kemp, is he's walking down Main Street, and I'm kind of leaning up against my dad's brick building of, you know, downtown Main Street of this little town, Watertown, South Dakota. And Kemp's walking down the street, the middle of the street with his family, and no one is approaching him. And I'm guessing he looked over and saw football jerseys and something he could identify with, and he made a beeline through the crowd to get to us. And he came up and he said, "Hey, how you doing? I'm Jack Kemp." That's my Jack Kemp impersonator. And he had his son with him, Jeff, who was playing for the Rams at the time, and the rest of his family, and just, you know, meeting him and everything kind of got me interested. And then I went off to college. I became involved in college Republicans, and I went to Regent University for grad school, and I worked on Ollie North's campaign for Senate while I was there.
Huh.
Then I worked for Buchanan's presidential campaign in McLean after that, and various other congressional campaigns, one in Virginia and other, a lot of campaigns, some in Minnesota and other places for a long time.
How in the world did you get it to Georgia?
I met my wife in Virginia.
And she says, I'm not moving to South Dakota.
Yeah, she did not want to move north of the Mason-Dixon line. And I went to law school in Mississippi.
Wow.
And I've actually, that was very different because I met most of the people that were in Ghosts of Mississippi. It's a very tight-knit community.
Wow.
I got my first job offer. I had one in California and one here in Georgia, and I decided on Georgia. Or we decided on Georgia.
Very wise choice, I would think.
It was.
Jason, as far as politics go, I always joke that I am the kiss of death for anybody in a primary. Pretty much whoever I back in a primary seems to lose. And so far this year, that's continuing to hold true. But how is the general attitude, from your vantage point, of Republicans in Georgia? Is it upbeat? Or are they worried?
No, I think it's pretty upbeat, but, I guess the only thing that any of the candidates have to worry about is the actual turnout.
Right.
That's what it's always about anyway, and there is a low turnout during the regular primary. I don't know what it's going to look like during the runoff.
Right, yeah.
For U.S. Senate or for any of these other races that are in a runoff.
I got a text actually this week from a good friend of mine asking who I was backing in the primary, and I'll just hold off on segment on the air, but and I had mentioned who I was backing, and he said, well, I heard he was so-and-so, and I wrote back and said, you need to be, vote whoever you want to, but you need to be careful about getting your information from from his opponents. I mean, don't necessarily believe what somebody's opponent says about them. You need to do your own research on that. You know, the national media, at least, I see it that the seat here in Georgia, the seat being vacated by Senator Chambliss, is actually up for grabs by Democrats. Now, I know you're the chairman of the GOP committee and you got to say the party line here, but are you concerned about that?
Well, I guess it just depends on if the vote turns out. I mean, there's anyone should always be concerned.
Right.
So I guess that's
is the polling data for Republicans generally positive and maybe that's impossible to say until we actually have until the Republicans actually have a candidate to run. Maybe that's impossible to say. Is there any polling that indicates anything to be positive about in that regard?
Well, yeah, the polls have been very good, but it also depends on what poll you look at.
Right.
And quite frankly, I don't trust a lot of the polls because they're run by the candidate, candidate that's running. And so it's very hard to, there's only a couple different polling places I really usually trust, but some of them have been very wrong. Look at, for example, Dick Morris. With the last presidential election, guaranteeing basically that Romney was going to win. I mean,
you haven't seen him around much since then.
What he doesn't probably know is that Romney pulled out of Florida pretty early.
Right.
I don't know if he thought he had Florida or what, but all the ground people left there, which was a horrible mistake, and they ended up losing Florida, which was big.
Yeah, I was
Obama.
I was quite. I actually was a pretty big Dick Morris fan, and I actually was quite disappointed and surprised, I'll have to say, because and at the end, kind of annoyed with him, as I think a lot of people were. You don't see him on the news too much anymore. He sort of got slammed down. Jason, being the GOP chair, that meaning you're in a leadership position there, I guess you have to be very careful, don't you, during a primary, to keep it pretty level. You don't endorse anyone in a primary, do you, or do you?
The state Republican Party rules say that you cannot endorse someone in your official capacity.
Right.
So in other words, I can't say I, Jason Thompson, as
right.
Georgia Republican Party 7th District Chairman, endorse candidate X.
Right.
However, you can work on their campaigns and say good things about them or bad things about the other ones. But also, yeah, kind of have to be cautious, because the fact of the matter is someone's going to win, someone's going to lose,
right.
and you've got to work with the winner. Now, if you've been saying negative things constantly throughout about the winner, it makes things a little hard to work for them.
And it
also hurts their campaign.
But that's true at every level in a primary. You know, both the Democrats and Republicans in a primary, they beat each other up pretty hard in a primary and then come out. And then you do have to do this sort of party consolidation sort of. And, you know, generally it sort of seems to work as long as nobody goes too far out there and says, you know, as long as people keep it reasonably clean and kind of fight fair, I guess is the way you'd put it. Everyone seems to sort of take that. So and at least from what I can see, I'm not into this like you are. This Senate runoff has been reasonably fair. Would you say that?
In what way?
They attack each other hard, but I don't see anything particularly underhanded going on. At least not out in public. There may be things behind the scenes that those of us not inside the ballpark see, but.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in general, as far as politics goes, I'd probably agree with that.
I think the same word you might want to say there, Mr. Attorney, about getting that done there. Hey, you know, let's wait and do this after the next break, because we're going to be out of time. I was going to ask you a question about the business friendliness here of Georgia, and I'd like to ask you that after the break, because it's a big deal to me in business and something actually I'm quite proud of being here in Georgia. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Our guest is Jason Thompson, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield talking with Jason Thompson. Jason is the chairman of the Republican 7th District here in Georgia and is also an attorney and a businessman. Jason, I interviewed Kyle Jackson here a few weeks ago. I interviewed him a couple of times. Very nice guy with a Georgia NFIB. And Kyle has an interesting statement that a lot of probably NFIB people would not say about the states they're in, but Kyle says that Georgia is, in general, a pretty friendly state legislatively to business. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes. I think that's pretty obvious. And honestly, what the governor and others have done with opening it up for the movie industry to move here is wonderful.
That is unbelievable what's happening with that. It shocks me. We were talking about that this week with somebody, that there's this large what used to be a Western Electric plant up there off of I-85 in Gwinnett County. And that's now a big movie. It's still part of it's a plant, but part of it's a giant movie production. Which they tell me they did part of the Hunger Games in there even. And
that's my understanding. And then also down in I think Sonoya, they're filming like The Walking Dead and
exactly.
everything down
yep.
there, and you know, Adam Sandler just did a new his most recent movie out a bunch of it out by the Mall of Georgia and in Buford, Georgia. So yeah, it's great to see. Hopefully that doesn't mean it's going to attract a bunch of crazy liberals from California, but it's great for business and great for Hollywood, you know, the Hollywood types to create a film here because of the tax incentive.
I was going to say that there's a reason they're here. It's not because it's not because they just like the Georgia weather better. It's because of the tax environment here and the regulatory environment here is just so much better. You know, Georgia, depending on who you read, which magazine, Georgia is always in the top five, and in many cases, number one is a place to start a business. You know, you were talking about when you got out of college, you were depending on, out of law school, you were thinking about moving to California or here. I'm going to tell you my story. I was working for a company in Texas and did some market research on where to move and start a business, and where I came up with the kind of the electronic variable electronic motor drive business. I can't even say it. Variable frequency drive business. And I came up with at that time, it was back in '88. Came up with Los Angeles, Atlanta, or Chicago. And my wife said, "I'm not moving to Los Angeles or Chicago." So that's how we ended up in Atlanta. So
good
you know,
for her.
So I kind of had that same deal. Hey, what's your gut feel on the Republicans taking control of the U.S. Senate? What's your gut feel on that?
I think they have a really good chance. I think we'll probably see it happen. As you know, as time goes on, as with the administration, and there's so many horrible, unconstitutional things going on, like daily. There's some sort of scandal. You notice that a lot of the Senate Democrats and even House Democrats are trying to distance themselves from the president because they have to run for election.
Right.
And it's hurting them. And I think now is as good a time as ever for the Republicans to take back the U.S. Senate.
Well, then here's another question, I guess, goes along with that. Well, if that happens, if the Republicans do, in fact, gain control of the U.S. Senate, with President Obama still as the president, what will actually change? Will anything, I mean, what can they actually, you know, you can only do so much if the president has the veto power that's going to take a two-third vote to overturn it.
I don't know. Maybe they'll end up getting the backbones to actually impeach and convict.
I don't see that happening yet after the Clinton episode of that, but you.
Well, if you look at Bill Clinton, that was all over, the fact that he was lying about an affair
lawsuit
with an intern.
Right, right.
We have much, much worse things here. And that's one of the main disappointments that I've had is that, you know, when you talk to different congressmen, they'll say, well, you know, the Senate can't really, you know, we don't have the Senate to do anything about it. But for me, I almost feel like, you know, and then they also think, of course, that might hurt them in midterm elections and the like. But my feeling on it is that they have a constitutional duty to go forward with impeachment charges, regardless of what happens.
You know, you're leaning into something else I was going to ask you about. And I, after what you just said there, I think I already know your answer. But as a GOP chairman, I won't put it as a question, I'll put it more as a statement. You obviously understand the frustration, because you just expressed some of it yourself right there, that many rank and file Republican voters seem to have with what's usually termed the Republican establishment. Is this Republican establishment deal, is that anything here in Georgia, do you think, or is that more of a national issue, or is that a problem here in Georgia too?
It's both. A lot of it, though, unfortunately, is national with Republican National Committee, and there's been some comments made that they don't really care about the rank and file or grassroots Republicans, that they can just find other people, things like that. That's Karl Rove's one of the worst ones.
Yep.
That's my opinion. That's not the opinion of the Georgia Republican Party or anything like that. That's my personal opinion.
You've got to learn to stop holding back your feelings and just express them.
I know it.
You've got to get more blunt about that. Hey, you know, swap channels here just a little bit. We'd mentioned my state representative, B.J. Pack. And when B.J. ran, I was very actively supporting another candidate, and I'd never heard of him. You know, he came literally from total obscurity. I mean, nobody heard of him. And the people that were sort of the insiders in our area down there said, this guy has no chance of getting elected. And he got rather handily elected and is running, at least in the primary, unopposed, or ran in the primary unopposed. And I think he's done a great job. Jason, I kind of like the idea. I just like it. The idea that a person with very little political experience or background can – here in Georgia, run for an office and get elected. Is that common throughout Georgia, or is BJ an exception to that?
Well, it is and it isn't. And if, you know, I guess it also depends on if you really believe a person has no political background, because there's some people that claim that they don't, but they really do.
You're right. But at least as far as any public, I mean, no one had ever heard of him. You know, what he did, he came through my subdivision, as he did many of them. Like I said, I was backing another person. And he worked very hard. He knocked on a lot of doors and shook a lot of hands. I mean, I don't know anybody did more than he did for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's really something to be said about a door-to-door, you know, burning off the shoe leather campaign. I mean, in this day and age with all the, you know, texting and messaging over the through email and TV ads and all this other stuff, really face-to-face contact means a lot. And if, you know, in a small state house district, you have the opportunity to really do that instead of just blasting tons of direct mail.
You know, we make the point here on Driven to Business a lot, and we talk a lot about marketing and sales, and that point's been made by a lot of people on here, that with all of the plethora of ways to market these days, with the internet and texting and social media and of course advertising here on the radio and television, all sorts of ways, that really people are hit with so many ads and bombarded with so many marketing messages now that we've all sort of developed, almost all of Americans have developed filters for that, where we really don't hear about half of that. We just tune it right out. And what really does count, though, is word of mouth. It's the personal side of it. That in business, you know, if I'm going to eat lunch around here and I want to go to eat lunch, and I ask somebody here in the station where to eat, and they mention a little place to go eat, I'm much more likely to go to that place than I am someplace that's been advertising to me all day. And I think even in politics, that still plays out. In a local area, they vote for BJ because, and I'm just using him for an example, but they vote for him because they know who he is. They've met him, and whether they really know him or not, like, hey, I met the guy, shook his hand, I like him. You know, has a nice family.
I totally agree, and he's a guy that gets around and meets with people, not just the door to door during the campaign, but he's out and about and going to different community events and things like that. So that obviously helps out a lot for his campaign overall.
All right,
I totally agree with that.
As a inside player politician, or at least inside the world of politics, I've always wanted to ask this of somebody because it's one of my own theories, and you can shoot me down if you like. I often think that swing voters have got to be the dumbest voters of anybody out there, or at least the most unprincipled, because you see two candidates running, like for president, there could not be a bigger difference. And if you can swing between the two of those on an ad or something, am I wrong?
I don't think you're probably too far off. I mean, one of my favorite movies, I actually did a blog. I do a blog on my law firm website. I did a blog about Idiocracy. Have you seen that movie?
I don't think so.
You got to see it. I mean, when I first watched it, I thought, oh, my God, maybe this is some sort of a far leftist movie or something, but it wasn't. It was the guy that did it was Mike Judge, and I saw an interview with him when he said he didn't have with Fox Films, he was supposed to do a couple of movies. He did Office Space was one of them, and then he was supposed to do another one. And I don't think Fox Films really didn't put a bunch of money into it and didn't really promote or advertise it, but it's kind of become like a cult hit for people that find out about it. And it's either Luke or Owen Wilson, the dark-haired one, and Maya Rudolph are in the movie. And basically it takes place in the future. They're frozen in time and go ahead of 500 years into the future. And this guy, Wilson, who's of average to below intelligence, is now the smartest man alive. But everything is everything is like sexualized and everything, you know, it's almost like a hedonistic type of society.
I have seen that. Now that you said, I didn't recognize the name, but I have seen that. It's hilarious.
The president is a former WWF or WWE.
Exactly.
Wrestler. And it's, you know, there's so many things in it that, you know, as you watch through, you kind of come to the conclusion, oh my God, we're not very far off from this. Well, yeah. look at these. When you watch, like, you know, Jay Leno used to do this, they go out onto the street and they say, who's the vice president?
They can't name it.
Exactly. They can't name it, but they can name anything about the Kardashians or Captain Crunch.
Or who got voted off Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
Hey, hang on through the break. Our final segment here, Jason, back in a minute. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back. Hang around. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. Talking with the surprisingly entertaining attorney and head of the 7th GOP district here in Georgia, Jason Thompson. Jason, glad to have you here. Hey, Jason, to be a little bit serious, just a moment, get a little bit more serious. Many of us in business, as you might imagine, we are never happy to get a phone call from any government agency. If somebody tells me that the city of Norcross is on the phone, and I like those people down there, but I'm like, oh, doggone, what do they want? Or if somebody from the state of Georgia is on the phone, it's like, oh, man. And especially if somebody from any Fed agency is on the phone, I'm like, oh, this is not – it's never good. And I know this is obvious enough, but why is that? Why are we that way?
Well, it's become tyrannical, unfortunately. I mean, people are really in fear of the government, and it's sad because it shouldn't be that way. I mean, the government should actually be in fear of the citizens,
right?
But it's not that way. It's the other way, and I mean, I don't know what other word to use for it, but when it's like that, you have tyranny, and give an example. I'm driving down the road one day, and I see all these like armored assault vehicles coming down the road. The police are also becoming militarized.
Right.
And I have a lot of police officer friends, and some of them probably won't agree with what I'm saying, but they don't need that stuff.
I agree with that.
I know one that. Not too long ago, a friend of mine had to go. There was a guy that locked himself in a hotel, and they brought all the militarized vehicles to get him out. I don't know why they needed those to get him out of the hotel room.
Right.
They could have used, like, a battering ram or kicked in the door or something. It didn't make sense to me. They didn't know he was armed, any of that. It just, it's just, even for that's a local level. But now, and it just gets worse as you go on up to a national level. They have so much power and control. Now they have such control over all of our information that's also very scary as well. Some people probably don't care about it or even think about it because they're too busy working just to try to get by.
You know, that brings up a point I often make. A lot of small business people, when you talk to them about this, they will tell you, look, I vote, but I'm not that interested in politics. What they want to do is just be free to run their business, live their lives, and be left alone. But there is a truism that if you don't involve your business in government, government does want to be involved in your business. There's no question about that. And you know, Jason, having just come through the celebration of Independence Day here, I actually sat down and actually read the entire Declaration of Independence here on Independence Day just to remind myself of what a remarkable country we live in and what remarkable freedoms we enjoy. But they're not – it's not the natural state of human history. I mean, if you look back through history, what we have here is not the norm. We're the exception. And I think that all of us – whether you're Republican or Democrat or anything, all of us need to hold government, keep government understanding that they work for us. We do not work for them, and they should fear us. We should not fear them. They should fear being thrown out of their jobs. And I think that one of the problems is that government gets so large, you're dealing many times with people that are not elected. And what's amazing to me, as I continue to find out these things, is that the elected officials really have no control over the. Are very limited control over the sort of the permanent political class, the people that permanently inhabit government and permanently just arbitrarily make rules that bother you. I know Republicans do talk about small government all the time. Is it a fair criticism to say that perhaps Republicans lost their way a bit in recent years on that?
Well, Well, yes, it just depends on who you're talking about, because some of the elected officials, most certainly. A lot of the grassroots establishment have supported people who say they're going to do one thing and then do another when they get into Congress or Senate or even, you know, locally. So that is a fair statement for some of them. There's some that really fight and you know, and do their best to lower, you know, to cut government spending. And, but you know, they're kind of you know, battling against this huge Leviathan that might be a losing battle. I mean, I fear for what it's going to look like for my own children. But to getting back to what you know you're talking about, people say, you know, I don't really want to get into that political stuff, or it's too ugly, or whatever. I mean, there are times I feel that way.
Sure.
That you know, maybe I should say the heck with it. But then at the same time, I really feel called to do this, and I feel like, you know, if I don't do it, who else is going to do it? And but to those people that say that I really shouldn't be involved, or I really don't have time for this, or don't want to, you know, get their hands dirty, whatever. They just think it's too ugly. At least write a letter.
You know, right.
Make a phone call. Send an email. Because I can tell you that really, really does matter. If there's an elected official that gets a ton of mail or faxes or phone calls or emails, they pay attention.
Right.
And the reason why they pay attention is because when they get a mass of emails and calls and letters and things like that, they know that those are constituents. They're going to boot them out of office if they don't do if they don't do what they want.
Are you generally optimistic about our country? I mean, are you optimistic about it?
I would like to say that I am.
that's a lawyer answer there.
No, I'm not. I'd love to say, yeah, I'm just like Ronald Reagan. I want to see a shining city on the hill. That I'm really not very optimistic, unless there's something that really changes things. That, you know, there is something out there, and I want to tell you about it. It's called the Compact for America. It was put together by some very intelligent people. The Goldwater Institute had some people that helped with it, and a friend of mine, Kevin Gutzman, who's a professor who's written some New York Times bestsellers, was also instrumental in putting it together. But all these states do interstate compacts for many different things, for highways,
right,
for driver's licenses and things like that. Well, this is a compact, and the first one is for a compact for a balanced budget. And it was signed here in Georgia by Governor Deal. It was passed and then signed into law. And then Alaska is the second state, and there are other states that are looking at signing it. And it's basically for a balanced budget amendment. That would obviously really help. But when you look at Mark Levin's, I don't know if you've read his Liberty Amendment.
I have read that.
Or what is it called? Liberty?
I forgot.
Is it Liberty Amendment?
That sounds something like that, yes.
Well, it's basically the same stuff. That's what Compact for America is. And, you know, talking about term limits. I used to be a guy that wasn't for term limits. And I know the pros and cons for term limits, but, you know, we've kind of developed a ruling class, especially in the U.S. Senate, because we don't have term limits.
A political elite, if you will. Is there a website people can look Compact to America on? Is there a website for that?
I think it's compactforamerica.org.
Okay, compactforamerica.org. By the way, that will be on eddiemayfield.com. Go there, hit blogs about today's program, and I'll have links here. Jason, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And I hope you come back on. I mean, I'd like to talk to you after the election and see where we stand here in Georgia in that
Hopefully
regard.
Hopefully good.
A good deal. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Hey, Jason, thanks for coming on. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. We're here every week. We'll see you next Saturday morning. Bye.